Hey everyone, we're back with another episode of the Filter Photography Podcast. I'm Matt Walter, which you probably know because I don't think this podcast is big enough to get by on name alone. So I probably told you to come here and you're probably listening, but we are getting a lot of streams now and I really appreciate that. I'm not going to do the whole advertising model and whatnot. So I just appreciate you guys being here. I like doing it. I like when people send in questions. I like chatting about stuff. So we're just going to keep it rolling like that. It's not going to be, you know, any huge deal or anything like that to, you know, make bank. It's not the plan. But, you know, the last few eps have been really fun because I've been able to interview people that I really like and admire and, you know, that have given me opportunities or I've worked closely with them. And I want to do a heap more of that. And I've got a heap more, you know, ideas for people I can get on the podcast. Just got to find out a way to make it relevant to you guys. There's so many interview podcasts out there which are like, you know, how did you get started? You know, it's more fun to talk about the issues. And, you know, we got a couple of issues to talk about today, but it's just me. You don't have someone else to, you know, spice this up. It's just me. I'm sorry. If you don't want to listen to me, I don't know why you subscribe, but if you don't want to listen to me, that's totally fine. But I've got an important notice. Stickies are finishing this week. This is the last week to get your hands on stickies. If you haven't been following my Instagram stories, I do unboxings of stickies on there. And I think that's been a highlight of my life, really, collecting the stickies. No golden banana, but I never thought I would get the golden banana. All I really wanted was, you know, all I really wanted was a watermelon, actually. And I think I got him and it was a bit of a letdown, but the kiwi was really cool. The kiwi was really fun. I gave him 5 out of 5 stickies. And I appreciate everyone sending in videos of their sticky collection. It's not annoying. It's great. It's great fun. So keep on collecting stickies. I think this week is your last week. Consider yourself warned. I know I've been crying myself to sleep at night, and I expect you to be doing the same over our little plastic friends. Yeah, I mentioned that we, you know, this podcast is successful though because you guys send in questions, and I appreciate you sending in the questions because obviously it helps fuel the show. But more importantly than that, it helps other photographers out there learn. You know, it's one of those situations where you're like, oh, no question is a dumb question. It really isn't. You know, sharing knowledge is really the spirit of photography. Helping others learn how to be better photographers is what it's all about. That's what, for me, is the most fun part about photography. I don't have all the answers. I don't even have 1% of the total answers, but I'll give you my opinion and hopefully it'll help. And the feedback that I've been getting is that it does help. So when you guys send in your questions, you're helping someone else that you've never met. And I think that's a cool vibe. But this week, I also read about a beer that can develop Kodak film. Like, there's this beer, it's called Super 8 film, like all one word. And apparently it can develop Kodak Tri-X film. And this guy created this beer and he reckons that the acidity and the vitamin C in the beer can help develop, you know, the film. And Kodak confirmed it works. So obviously it does. There's like, I think it's 5.3% in strength, which is heavier than most heavy beers even. But it's made with like fruity stuff like mango, blackberry, raspberry, and all these other berries. It's not a paid sponsorship, but I found that interesting. And I like a fruity tasting beer. Like Stone & Wood is delicious for that reason, but I don't think Stone & Wood can develop film. So I think Stone & Wood should get onto that. Another thing this week, I was forwarded a copy of the terms and conditions from a competition that's happening at the moment to shoot Groove in the Moo. I think it's called Shoot the Moo Comp. It got sent to me and I thought it was like interesting to break down this contract that's in place for the terms and conditions. Because last episode, when we talked about photography contracts, we're sort of talking about it from an overarching perspective, but now that we have a real contract that's really doing the rounds at the moment, I figure, you know, why don't we have a look at it? I love Groove and the Moo, just to start with. Like, I've loved their lineups over the years, and I've never shot one, but their lineups are always really rad. But because Michelle Grace Hunter and myself talked about photography contracts, you know, I think it might be useful to pull this one apart, you know, and so you guys can be mindful of what you're signing away when you do that. Contracts like this one are pretty common. Like, they're not common as in all the contracts are like this, but if there's a contract, this style of contract is pretty common, in my opinion. You know, so imagine you were the winner of this competition. Like, Shoot the Moo is like, you know, you put in some photos and you say, hey, I want to shoot this, and you get an opportunity to shoot the festival and spend some time with the festival photographer that they've got. I don't know who that is, but like, whoever it is, you know, that's a cool opportunity. But you know, think about it, right? If you were the winner of the competition and you get this great opportunity to shoot the festival, you end up taking this amazing photo that you love more than anything else in your portfolio. Because, you know, have a look at the contract, because it instantly becomes worthless, right? Yeah, let's break down this contract. I'm going to read these sections to you, but if you want to jump over to photographypodcast.com.au, in the show notes, I've got all these passages written out, right? But for you audio junkies, says section 5, ownership of the winner's photographs. Section 5.1, by taking photographs as defined herein at the winner's selected show, each winner acknowledges and agrees that A, the promoter shall own the entire copyright in perpetuity throughout the world and in each and every photograph, free of any claim whatsoever by the person who creates the photograph or any third party. Any rights that the creator of the photograph may otherwise possess in any photograph shall be deemed transferred from the creator of such photograph to the promoter, and the creator agrees that he or she will sign any further documentation required to give effect to this clause. Wow, that's only A. But what that means is that you, as the photo's creator, you're no longer the owner of the photo. The promoter, which is Groove and the Moo, is. And then here we got section B. To hereby waive all his or her rights, including his or her moral rights, to each and every photograph, and not to exploit, reproduce, or use his or her photographs in any manner whatsoever, either commercially or for promotional purposes. What this means is, you know, you can't sell your photos as prints or do anything really, you know, to make any money from them. If you have, you know, if you take a photo of a band and the band really loves the photo and they want to use it on a tour poster later, you have to say no. That's what that means. C, that the promoter shall have the sole and exclusive right to manufacture, advertise, sell, license, or otherwise use, exploit, or dispose of the photo submitted into this competition, as the promoter solely decides, without any remuneration payable to the entrants of the competition or any third party, and the promoter shall not be required to make any payments in connection with the photograph submitted to this competition or their exploitation. So that means that if Groove and the Moo want to put your photo on a shirt for next year's event, they don't have to pay you for it. They can just go ahead and sell those shirts, make all that money, and you don't get any. And finally, section D, all photographs shall be and remain the property of the promoter and may be used in future commercial and marketing exercises, including but not limited to being displayed as part of the shootthemoo.com website. And then actually there's another one here, E, Groove and the Moo and the promoter grants permission for each winner to use the photographs taken in their portfolio or any manner of online/exhibition purpose. So you can use your photos in your portfolio or at an exhibition, but the previous points mean that you can't sell them as prints. So we've got A, B, C, D, all give away your rights to Groove in the Moo. And E, they say, but you can still use it as long as you're not making any money. That's basically the contract, right? There's all these other points, but that's about the rights of your image. So when we talk about a restrictive contract, this is the type of contract that we're talking about. Arctic Monkeys had a similar one from what was posted online by someone. And we talked last episode about, you know, how some of those contracts can be quite restrictive. But the contracts themselves of like this kind of nature, they're few and far between, but they obviously exist. I found this like interesting little statement on Shoot the Moo's website. The very first line says, "Are you an avid photographer keen to make this your career?" I was like, okay, are you an avid photographer keen to make this your career? If you're keen to make it your career, you need to be aware of what you're signing away. Like, this is business, this is a career. An artist or a band would never sign a distribution deal that means that they get no payment in exchange for what they've, you know, distributed through the distributor, you know, despite how many times it's listened to. And a band wouldn't play the festival itself for no payment either. Even if it's just like a really small amount of money for those opening bands, and in the end they lose money, they still got paid something, and it's fair that everyone gets paid. You manage your costs, of course, like beyond that, but everyone gets some kind of money. And as a photographer, you should value your work equally and at least consider your future monetary gain with the work that you create. I have faith that the people at Groove in the Moo are good eggs. Like, I've heard great things. Like I said, I've never shot it before, but I've always heard that they treat everyone so well. And so that's a sign of people that care. And so I have faith that they're good eggs, and there's been some kind of legal team that has, you know, defaulted to some kind of over-the-top contract stipulations. Just a standard sort of copy and paste thing, change client to the actual entity being Groove in the Moo. The opportunity that is here to Shoot the Moo, it's good. And I applaud Groove in the Moo for offering it. That's great. But signing away your rights in full is not something that I would personally recommend any photographer of any experience level. A contract where everyone wins is granting Groove in the Moo non-exclusive rights to use your image on digital mediums, you know, with a credit for a fixed period of time, like let's say 12 months so they can promote next year's event. Anything that makes money because of the photo that was used should be agreed to separately, like t-shirts and stuff like that. But any like digital medium used, just throw a name on. You know, exposure doesn't feed people, but given there is a benefit here to, you know, you win the comp and you get an opportunity, that should just be, you know, there should be some benefit, not, hey, we're taking your photo rights as well. Because if there's some non-exclusive rights there, everyone wins. You know, Groove in the Moo gets content, you keep your rights for future work and your career, and you have the opportunity to work, you know, with a festival in a business sense. That's the career part. All good eggs, you know, benefit in the music industry's main meal known as scrambled eggs. That even makes sense. I'm not actually sure that that makes sense, but it's going to have eggs for dinner, and I love a good analogy. And so I thought, yeah, let's just do that. All right. That's what I think of that. We pulled apart a real contract there that's really going around now. Like I said, great opportunity, but I think it's fair to have a look at what you're signing away, because the winner of a competition, you should be the winner. There shouldn't be, you shouldn't be winning the opportunity to trade, I guess. But I had this thought, right? Matt's Mind, we can call this like Matt's Mind segment. And I was editing my photos and I thought, like, you know, what's the role of music in photography in the first place? Like, I'm taking photos of music, But if you're like, you know, merely throwing on some music while you edit your photos, you know, and think that's just part of the process, I don't think you're, you know, giving music the credit it deserves. You know, music makes you feel certain ways and it also affects the way you do certain things. Like you think about boxers or MMA fighters. They probably don't get ready to enter the ring by listening to classical music or Enya or something like that. You know, they need to feel pumped up, like ready for battle, and probably listen to something high energy like, you know, rap or hard rock or, you know, even dance or whatever. You know, and when we edit photos, we're using energy. Sure, we're not MMA fighters or boxers, or most of us probably aren't that. And it might not, you know, feel like we're using that much energy, but the formula for editing is only half of the process. Like, you know, increase exposure, decrease exposure, tint, HSL, that kind of stuff. You know, the decisions you make within the parameters of the formula that you use, that's just important as, you know, the process itself. And as a music photographer, I prefer to listen to the music of the artist that I'm editing. And I was thinking, why do I do that? And I think the reason why I do that is because a client expects the energy to reflect that of the artist. So it's important to understand what emotion I'm trying to get out of the photo in the first place. And the music can help me connect with that. You know, especially when I'm tired the next day and I'm trying to meet the deadline. You know, it helps me stay connected, I find. When I first started shooting, I thought taking the photos was 90% of the process in creating a great photo. I thought it was like all about facial expressions, lighting, and other factors that contribute to visually portraying the vibes of the bands and the music. I find when I edit photos of an artist like June Rats, for example, like something high energy, my edits are a lot messier than the edits I do for Camp Cope. Camp Cope's edits are like more understated, whereas June Rat's edits, they, you know, a lot of more attention is paid to the show's environment rather than the actual musician. You know, equal attention's put on that as well, but, you know, I have to look at what's around the artist as well, because, you know, liquid flying through the air, accentuating that kind of stuff, really, you know, it adds more to a photo of June Rats than it would Camp Cope, for example. Whereas Camp Cope's, you know, edits are trying to display them as, you know, reflective but strong bands, you know, that, you know, not that June Rats aren't, you know what I mean? Like, but the June Rats edits are trying to display them with like this kind of looseness, this like energy, you know, that is more of like a party. And, you know, I'm trying to capture that vibe that the crowd remembers from the show, whatever that may be, right? Like, that's why it's different for a June Rats edit to a Camp Cope edit. And if I listened to Camp Cope while I was editing June Rats or vice versa, I'd probably edit them differently. And I'm not sure if I even edit from the perspective of the audience who was there trying to like simulate that connection. But it's something that seems to be more like naturally drawn out when I edit with the band's music on in the background. So I reckon give it a go. If you don't do it already, experiment with the editing process. You know, letting in music that, you know, you don't listen to but connects with the content that you're creating. It can really affect the way that you edit, and it can like bring out this flow that you might not otherwise have found. So it could even speed up your editing workflow. That's the golden, you know, that's a goal. That's a golden goal, to speed up that editing workflow, because I don't know about you, but I hate it. So, you know, that's something I think all photographers want to do. I'm keen to know what you think anyway. I'm keen to know what you think about the role of music in photography. Throw it in the comments or hit me up on Instagram or wherever else you follow me. But that's just a loose thought that I had today. And I'm like, I'm going to talk about that. So I might just do a loose thought every time. Why not? I'm like, I don't care. I don't have anything else to do. Do you? I mean, probably. And I probably have things I should be doing too. But let's wrap this up with some listener questions. Like I say, wrap this up with listener questions when we're probably only halfway through the podcast. But this is my favorite part. about the podcast, when you guys send in questions, like I said before, and are super helpful to everyone, like other photographers, and I just like chatting to people too, and I learn something as well. So Danos Photography, Danos_photography, asked, if you take photos of bands, what shutter speed do you use? It's like, what camera settings I use, it depends on so many different things. Shooting concerts doesn't have like a firm formula that you can use, like I was saying before with the discussion about the role of music in photography. If you're shooting a band that jumps around a lot, you're going to need a fast shutter speed. But that's going to come at the cost of light, obviously. Just assuming, you know about aperture, ISO, shutter speed, and that sort of the basic triangle there. You know, that's going to come at the cost of light. But if you're shooting a stationary singer-songwriter, for example, you could easily get away with a shutter speed as low as, you know, 1/30th of a second. On photographypodcast.com.au, I have some photo examples there. And I'll just briefly talk through. And we got Mikey from Soho on the drum kit. And I shot that with an aperture of 6.8 and a shutter speed of 1/400th. And 1/400th was important because drummers move so much. And so it generally, that's why you see fewer photos of drummers, because a lot of them move so fast and there's less light on them. So it's really hard to get a photo that has, you know, the relevant brightness that you need to at least enhance a little bit. So, you know, fortunately, Soho have great lighting. And so you can see that pick there. The second one, got Benny from Skeggs. He's moving a lot slower, right? So I use an aperture of 2.0 because this was in Skeggs' early days when they were opening up for June Rats. And so I use an aperture of f2.0. So, you know, there wasn't as much light there. And the shutter speed was 1/200th of a second. So much slower than what I did with Mikey, 1/400th. And then on the last one, I've got Georgia from Camp Cope. This was a daytime shoot, aperture of 5.6 and a shutter speed of 1/640th of a second. So, you know, way faster than it needs to be to get a crisp look there, but it's, you know, you can see sort of like a well-lit show, a decently lit show, and a daytime show, and you can sort of see the shutter speeds that are used on each of them. So I had to adapt my approach, obviously, for each of them, and you have to figure out what works best and think about your overall exposure with, you know, the other two things you got to factor in, like we said before, aperture and ISO. I hope that was helpful. Crushtor asked, is being photogenic a myth or are some people just ass ugly? I wasn't even sure if this was a real question, right? Like some people send in funny questions and I like that too. But it did sort of jolt a thought. So I thought I would answer it as if it's a legit question. And I reckon there's an easy answer. Everyone is who they are. There's no such things as, you know, ugly or unphotogenic because the subject is the subject. On corporate shoots or more, you know, clinical briefs, I make a point to say to the client that I don't do any touch-ups on people unless they specifically ask for them. When I do each photo, I then tell the subjects that I don't again because I feel like it helps them, you know, feel more comfortable with it. And saying that you don't do touch-ups doesn't mean that you won't do touch-ups. It means that you don't do them by default. As a photographer, it's not your place, I don't think, to make judgments on what people feel their flaws are. And that means we shouldn't anticipate that either because, trust me, the subject, they will feel judged if you, you know, anticipate that. I don't want to give them a complex that they didn't already have because I removed a mole that they had or something like that. I don't want to make them feel like they should be embarrassed by something. I've got a mole on my face that I don't love or I don't hate it. He's just my mate mole. And if someone photoshopped that out, I would be pretty upset because that's me and I don't have a problem with my mole friend. And at the same time, some clients have asked me to photoshop out, you know, the equivalent of my mole, just say, like, you know, they ask, asked me to Photoshop out. I think one was like, you know, hey, I feel like my eye droops a little lower than the other. I didn't think it did, but obviously they're self-conscious about it. And so I'm more than happy to do that. That's just, you know, something that might be a temporary problem or something like that. So yeah, it's a myth. You are who you are. Don't hide from it. You know, everyone's beautiful to someone. It sounds like cliche. It sounds lame, but I mean it. Like, everyone is. Matthew Ferrari wrote, band etiquette, new bands want to know. Band etiquette, new bands want to know. I want to know too. I'm not exactly sure what kind of etiquette you're talking about, but, you know, this one as well gave me some thoughts about, you know, common things I tell bands who are starting out that hit me up that want, you know, photos. And this is from the perspective of hiring me as a photographer or someone like me. I can't give you etiquette on how to be more effective or escape any common music industry problems because, you know, we have different roles within the industry. When a new band hits me up and they, you know, need photos for press releases, for example, I say, you know, ask three things. What's your budget? Where are you located? And what kind of photos do you want? Asking what their budget is, it helps manage expectations. Every photographer has different package rates. And I've given people rates early on in discussions and immediately the band sort of like took a step back and they were like, you know, whoa, we can't afford that. The booking, you know, just sort of ends right there. It just like, you know, I miss out on a booking and the band misses out on photos or they have to go somewhere else to get the photos when they've obviously hit you up as more of a priority than someone else. Like they wanted your look for whatever reason. But there's always a halfway mark. And I generally find it by asking what the band's budget is. And then I tell them my rate so we can compare sort of what they were looking to spend and what my rate is. And then, you know, I tell them how we can still work together so everyone wins. Because sometimes if a band says, look, I don't know what we want in terms of promo photos. Any ideas that you have is cool with us. And that takes thinking. I'm happy to do it, but we can keep costs down by you and your band, you know, being prepared with some kind of initial location scouting to help speed up the process or some kind of idea that doesn't, you know, make me go on a wild goose hunt to get it because that's time as well. So choosing your location helps paint, you know, the photographer's, you know, mind with a picture of what you're looking for. One thing I'll add, right, is that the photos that, you know, you get, this is especially for like live stuff. The photos you get, they're reflective of you. So what you do on stage or off, that's all we can capture. We can't create photos of you doing something crazy if you never did it. My advice for getting the most out of your photographer that you've hired is to play with as much confidence as you possibly can to so you can sort of like grow into your photos. Because I don't think you'll ever overstate your confidence. So if you play with as much confidence as you can, even if you feel like an idiot, I think you'll get more longevity out of your photos because there'll be these, you know, differences in, you know, across the photos. You're not going to get a photo hanging from the roof like, you know, clowns get, or a photo of you like throwing the guitar in the air like, you know, Skeggs or June Rats get if you don't do it. You got to throw the guitar. You got to hang from the roof. So play with as much confidence as you can and move around as much as you can. And the photos, they'll show that energy as well. Final question. Bonsky_67. Bonsky, what position are you in, if anyone, whether it's a muso or not, ask you to delete a pic you've taken? It's a good question, but I'm not sure there's a good answer. I would love to give you a good answer, but you know, I've never had anyone ask me to delete a photo. If I had, you know, I would say so right now because I don't think there's any harm in asking someone to delete a photo. I don't think I've been faced with that problem because I would never edit a photo or even shortlist a photo to be edited where the subject doesn't look good or isn't reflective of the brand that they're representing. If you're into street photography, I would think you would probably get asked this a fair bit. There's some gray areas around, you know, street photography and what you can and can't do, you know, being in public spaces and whatnot. And there's a heap of great articles out there on what you can and can't do. But if someone asked me to delete a photo in a street photography situation, you know, I'd agree and I'd delete it. I think that's just basic manners. And I would hope the person would ask me to delete it, you know, in a polite way, and that would make the situation, you know, a lot more chill. I don't think there's any kind of like hard or fast. I don't think there's any firm yes or no answer to it, is my point. I think it's a case of do what you would expect others to do for you. Imagine like if you're a paparazzi though, like, can you imagine how often they would get asked to delete stuff? Like they would do it all the time. The guy that photographed Britney with the umbrella, you know, when Britney was like going at that car with the umbrella, that is such a good photo. Like I love that photo, man. It's nothing creative or anything about it, but it was just like that defined that decade, in my opinion. But I bet they were asked to delete that or not to sell it to the publication ahead of the sale. Whether they can or can't, I don't know. Like, you know, I trust that the paparazzi, you know, knows what they can and can't do. But it's out there now. Anyway, bottom line is, yeah, I would delete it if someone asked me. Or just simply wouldn't use it, which is effectively the same. So yeah, I'm cool with that. But I encourage other people, like if you don't like a photo, just say like, I don't look good there. Some bands have said, oh, I look like an idiot there, but they didn't say don't use it. But I think, you know, look, that's effectively the same thing. You know, so much energy going into stuff. You saw those Beyonce pics and they obviously aren't that flattering. But I don't think that photographer should have released them. Like they know that's bad. They did it because they wanted Beyonce to look bad. And I think that's just mean. That's just, plain old, schoolyard meanness. All right. Pop's album comes out this Friday. Morbid Stuff. If you've listened to the singles that came out, it's got like a slightly different vibe while still being pop, which is cool. It's a good album. Also, Nature Nurture by Clowns comes out in 2 weeks. That's also a great album. Other than that, I've been listening to a lot of Dear Seattle, excited for their tour. So there's three bands, three great releases. One's out already. Dear Seattle's out already. Pup is on Friday. Morbid Stuff, that's great. And Clowns, Nature Nurture is out in 2 weeks. And that's also really great. So there you go. That's my listening homework to you. So when you edit photos within, you know, that genre, there's a good starting point if you don't feel like listening to the artist itself. But let me know what you think about that thought. And good luck to everyone that is entering the Groove in the Moo photography competition. Just read that contract. And all I'm saying is make an informed decision, but I believe in you. I believe in whatever you want to do. Is that lame? I don't know, but I genuinely do believe in you. And if you want to do anything cool, you can do it. Like seriously, some people write to me sometimes. I'm meant to be wrapping this up, but here's another thought. People write to me sometimes, how did you get to do what you do? It's like, you can do it too. Like everyone can do it. Everyone can do whatever the hell you want to do. There's always an amount of luck and skill and all that. But I think people create their own luck to a degree. And I think people hone their skills and get better at what they do. So just whatever it is you want to do, make a plan this week to start it. You know, don't worry about what people think. I took a risk making this podcast. I take a risk every time I hand photos in to, you know, the client. And now these clients are like friends of mine, right? But I still get nervous when I hand it in because I want them to like it. I want them to think I did a good job. So you're always putting yourself out there to a degree. I should also note that there's a fair few questions we didn't get to on this app. I've halved them out, right? Like I took half of them for this podcast, left out the funny ones that, you know, people asking, how are you? I'm good. Thank you. I haven't been so well. I've been feeling mentally under the weather in the answer to that. But it's important to take a time out. It's important to look after yourself and let people around you. One thing I've noticed with my mental health, let people around you know that you're not feeling great. People that understand, you know, the symptoms of your mental health or understand mental health in general. If you're not feeling good, just say that. It's totally fine. You know, people that, you know, you trust and that love you, they just want to know. They want to know that you're feeling okay or that you're not feeling okay. And, you know, any of those sort of worries that you have that, oh, look, I might be behaving a little bit erratic or I might be feeling or seeming really withdrawn or uninterested in what you're saying. It's also important to, you know, just give people a heads up so they can help with that. And you can just take a little bit of that anxiety away from yourself to worry about how you're coming across because the people that you love and that love you understand that maybe you're feeling a little bit off. And they'll be there for you when you're feeling a bit better because that time will come. You know, it might take longer for other people, but that time will come. Anyway, that's my mental health little rant. It's important to put some positivity out there. That's what helps me when I'm feeling a bit down. So, do something you love, feel good, and just know it does get better if you're feeling crap and reach out to someone if you need a little bit of a helping hand. Otherwise, I've got more questions for the next step. Think of something cool to talk about. I might play some more recorder. Who knows? I'll treat you guys. Leave you with a little fact. I learned that Jimmy Crack Corn, the little rhyme, it's a kid's song. Think on that. Talk to you next step. Jimmy Crack Corn and I don't.